Not long ago, corporations avoided political statements for fear of losing customers. Now it seems almost every company, large or small, is constantly pushing politics, particularly woke politics, even if it offends a large part of their customer base. What changed? Why did so many corporations go woke? That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Please like and subscribe to the channel. Let other people know about it. I really appreciate everybody who already has liked our episodes and subscribe to our channels wherever you might watch them, wherever you might listen to them. Just continue to do so. Also, you can follow us on social media at Crisis Mag. We're on basically all the different social media networks, so follow us there to find out our latest articles and different content that we're producing. Okay, so I got a lot of notes here, so I'm just going to go ahead and jump into it. Now, I can remember, I'm old enough to remember, a time when companies studiously avoided politics. They wanted nothing to do with anything that might be even slightly controversial. And they did this for a business reason. They knew if they took a political stand on something, they would potentially be alienating part of their customer base. Because it's not most companies, it's not like they are only, their customers are only of one part of the political spectrum. So a company like P&G, Procter & Gamble, for example, I mean, everybody buys toothpaste. Doesn't matter if you're liberal, conservative, libertarian, green, whatever, you're going to buy toothpaste. So you're not going to say anything that might offend or alienate some of those customers. And that was just the way it was. And everybody understood that. Nobody expected them really to do much more than that. I mean, yeah, every once in a while, a company might take a little bit of a stand, but essentially they stayed out of it and that was okay. However, now, I mean, we're doing this episode in June of 2022, and we all know what June is, right? For Catholics, of course, it's the month of the Sacred Heart, but that's not what most people think. In the pagan world, it is Pride Month. It is the month in which we glorify and say how great the homosexual lifestyle is and all the different alphabet people, LGBTQ, I think there's an I in there now. I'm not even sure what I stands for, and I don't care. But essentially what we're doing is we're talking about what we're promoting the homosexuality. But the most important thing to think about Pride Month when it comes to what I'm talking about today is that corporations slavishly promote Pride Month. They do everything they can. They will change their logos on their social media accounts to rainbows. They will put up rainbow flags at their offices or at their restaurants or whatever the case may be. They'll do everything they can to push Pride Month. I had a article a couple days ago at Crisis talking about how the Tampa Bay Rays, a Major League Baseball team, had their logos. They changed them into rainbow colors. And a few of the players refused to wear them. God bless them. But this wasn't really that big a deal in most circles. The big deal was the five guys who didn't wear them. It was just expected that everybody would do this. And so the question, though, becomes, why do companies do this when they know, they're not dumb, they know their customers. Why do these companies do this if they know it's going to alienate part of their customer base? After all, the whole purpose of a company is to make money. It's profit. It's to increase shareholder value. It's to help basically the people who work there and the people who own the company to support themselves, to live. So why would they do something that could potentially harm that ability for these? Why do they make these political statements, basically? Now, there's a couple different possible reasons, and all these have some truth in them. Potentially, it's possible they really believe it. Now, it's highly unlikely all these companies really believe this. First of all, we just know from polls, not everybody supports this, but it seems like almost every company does. Secondly, we know that these woke companies like Disney and other major multinational conglomerates, they don't push the Pride stuff in, for example, the Middle East, where it's going to be highly offensive to the people, for example, in Saudi Arabia. If they really believed it, they'd push it everywhere. But clearly, they don't really believe it. So I don't think that's really the reason. I would say some of these companies, there probably is a few people in their maybe in their executive ranks or in HR or something like that, who really do believe this. Maybe they have a diversity officer who really believes this. But I think generally speaking, the board of directors, the executive class, the CEO, the COO, CFO, people like that, I don't think they actually believe this. Another reason they might do this is they're simply afraid of backlash. They're afraid that if they don't do this, that it will harm their brand. It will harm their business. It will harm their profits. It's a small minority that really pushes these companies to do this, but they are very vocal. And frankly, they're often well off. It's well known that the homosexual community is more affluent than just the average Americans. And so they might be afraid of offending dollars, essentially. I don't think that's much of it. I think that's part of it, obviously. But I don't think that's much of it because we've actually have examples of a few companies that have not gone woke. They've actually gone anti-woke, like your Chick-fil-A's, Hobby Lobby, something like that. And they've done fine. In fact, they've done great. So I think companies see that, executives, I should say, see that, and they're like, okay, it doesn't really hurt us to do that from perspective of a customer base. So I don't think that's primarily the reason. Again, I'm sure some of that's a reason that there is a fear of a backlash. It also could be just simply going along with the crowd. It's simply an idea that, oh, you know, everybody else is doing it. We just have to do it too. And I imagine for a lot of smaller companies, that might be what it is. They see that, hey, this is the thing you do if you're a successful company. You put up your rainbow flags, you support BLM, do whatever the case may be. And so I think that's probably likely for some of the smaller companies particularly. I don't think that's necessarily the case, though, for some of these big, large corporations that do this. So the question becomes then, why do they do it? Why do so many corporations push the woke agenda, even though it might really hurt their bottom line because it could offend and alienate much of their customer base? The answer is three letters, ESG. Now, some of you might know what ESG is, some of you might not. So let me explain what it is. ESG is, I'm going to read a definition I found online that I thought was pretty good. ESG stands for environmental, social, and governance. First of all, just an aside, the fact that the three words aren't like, they're not comparable, they're different types of speech, just drives me crazy. Environmental, social, okay, and governance. Why don't you just make it governmental? But anyway. Environmental, social, and governance. Investors are increasingly applying these non-financial factors as part of their analysis process to identify material risk and growth opportunities. ESG metrics are not commonly part of mandatory financial reporting, though companies are increasingly making disclosures in their annual report or in a standalone sustainability report. Numerous institutions such as the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board, the Global Reporting Initiative, and the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures are working to form standards and define materially to facilitate incorporation of these factors into the investment process. Okay, I know that was a lot of like business speak and kind of corporate speak. But what we need to note here is ESG stands for Environmental, Social, and Governance. So essentially what that means is a company is ranked on those three categories. So the first one, environmental. Are they good for the environment? Is their product good for the environment? Are they fighting climate change? Are they doing like a recycling program? Things like that. Obviously, a company like an oil company is going to rank very poorly in this category. But even a company that doesn't have anything directly related, like are they doing things like, not polluting? Are they doing things like they're recycling in-house? Are they using recyclable products? Materials in their own products. Things like that will rank their environmental score. The second one is a social score. So are they good on social justice issues? Defined however these different company, different organizations rank them. So for example, fighting racism, fighting for social justice for LGBTQ, TFYZ, whatever people, things of that nature. And then obviously, in that case, conservative companies are going to be bad, most likely, in that ranking. And then finally, governance. Are they well-run? Do they have corruption in running it and things like that? So then what happens is one of these organizations, like I already mentioned, like the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board or the Global Reporting Initiative, they then give companies an ESG score based upon how well they rank in those three different categories. And so then that score is used to determine what are the best ESG companies. And then what happens is large investing companies such as Goldman Sachs, Vanguard, Fidelity, companies like that, they use those scores to determine their investments. So they might have an ESG index fund, for example, that will only invest in companies with high ESG scores. And if a company goes down in their ESG score, they might get removed from the index, an ESG fund. And so essentially what happens is that these investing companies look at, okay, what are the best ESG companies? And we're going to invest in them. As of December 2021, assets under management at global exchange trade sustainability funds that publicly set ESG investment objectives amount to more than $2.7 trillion with a T dollars. So you see lots of money is being invested in ESG companies, companies that have high ESG scores. Now, honestly, they've done analysis of this. These funds don't do that well because and it kind of makes sense in that you're not investing in them necessarily because they have the best return, the best profit, but because they're socially conscious, because they're good for the environment. And while they're well run, that probably would help them if they don't have a lot of corruption going on. Really, this is just a new take on the whole idea of socially conscious investing. I remember when I first got out into the work world after college, I got an IRA with my company, a 401k, I should say. And then I ended up putting it in my own IRA when I left the company. And at that point, I didn't want to, and I still didn't want to invest in any companies that I thought were doing bad things. In fact, I first invested in a mutual fund before I even thought this through. And I found out later, maybe a year or two later, one of the companies invested in was Playboy. So I wrote to them, asked them to drop it. They didn't. So I ended up dropping the mutual fund. And so the idea, but there were Catholic mutual funds programs that were socially conscious. Like they would only invest in companies they thought were aligned with Catholic values. I don't know if they still exist. I just remember this from the 1990s. There's so few companies anymore that probably align with Catholicism. I think it'd be a hard sell to do that. So the idea of a socially conscious investment is not a bad idea. Now, and so that itself is actually a good thing. I mean, as Catholics, we should be socially investing as well. For example, we shouldn't invest in Planned Parenthood. I don't think it's a public company. We shouldn't invest in some company that is doing evil things, though, obviously. So what's happened though with ESG is because these major funds are investing in ESG companies, companies now want to have high ESG scores. And that's something I don't think normal people understand, because they haven't really thought about it, they don't really care, is that a company, especially a large corporation, a publicly traded company, it's very important to them, probably more important than most things, to have a stock price that is going up, that is good. Why is that? It's because it's profitable, obviously, for the stock owners, the shareholders. And remember, the shareholders are the owners of the company. That's who the board of directors and the executives report to, is the shareholders ultimately. If their stock price is not going up and getting higher, then they have a problem because the owners are not happy at that point. Also, a higher stock price helps for better financing for the company. So let's say the company wants to do loans and different things. If your stock price is tanking, you can't really do that good, the better financing for your company. So a high stock price is very important. And so what happens is a company, an executive at a publicly traded company ends up thinking a bad ESG score is actually worse than selling a bad product. They could recover from a bad product being sold, just improve it. But if you have a bad ESG score, then all of a sudden these major investment funds are not going to invest in your company. Now, in theory, none of this is actually that terrible in the sense of, from a Catholic perspective, for example, if companies were more aligned with Catholic values, we'd all love that. We think that'd be great if companies thought about Catholic values when they were the way they operated and what they invested in themselves and things like that. The problem, though, is that what's happened is ESG has become a way to push woke causes. And I'll explain how in a minute. But essentially, what's happening is that woke causes are being pushed through the banner of ESG, particularly the E and the S. The G, not as much. But the E, obviously, that's how you push the climate change propaganda. If you're not if a company is not following the climate change change propaganda, then they're not going to get a good score on the E of ESG. But of course, the biggest place where you have a problem is the S, the social, because that can be interpreted in such a broad way. So any company that doesn't push Pride Month, it gets a knock on their ESG score, the S of their ESG. Any company that doesn't support Black Lives Matter, they get a knock on their ESG score, the S part of their ESG score. So what's happened is that the Great Reset crowd, essentially, has taken ESG as a way to shape the world. Shape the world not directly through governments as much as through supposedly private companies. And we'll talk about the relationship between government and corporations in a minute. These ESG scores end up, one of the problems is that these ESG scores end up wildly variant between the different organizations. So a corporation that does well in ESG under one ranking does poorly with another one, because the whole thing is just political. It's just a completely political way to try to push a political agenda, the woke political agenda, by trying to push that through this ESG. I mean, one great example of this is Tesla. You would think Tesla would get a really high ESG score, mostly because their E is going to be through the roof, right? I mean, they make electric cars. Isn't that what we're all supposed to be behind? However, they were recently booted from an ESG fund because their ESG score wasn't good enough by one ranking. The funny thing is, on other ESG rankings, they do quite well. So you see, it becomes a completely subjective process to determine what companies are woke enough. And another thing that is interestingly is some studies have shown that ESG companies do well in the ESG scores. They're actually not better at ESG, at actual ESG things, than non-ESG well scored, which again shows it's completely political. And actually, what also happens a lot of times is a lot of poor performing companies, corporations that actually aren't doing very well, they will embrace ESG as a way to cover up their problems, as a way to get hip and cool and get in these index funds, the ESG funds, and hopefully bump up their stock price some, because their stock is being bought by these large index funds, these large asset managers. So ultimately, the ESG companies don't actually do better financially. They're not more profitable. In fact, they do worse. And that makes sense, because if you're just picking companies for your fund based upon their ESG score and not their profitability, it's not going to do as well as a fund that is picked solely on profitability. That just makes sense. And it's also, though, because these companies often are poor performing companies that just embrace ESG to help hide their losses. Now, in the ESG world, the big dog, by far the number one asset manager when it comes to ESG stuff, is BlackRock. Now, I think BlackRock, first of all, sounds like a made-up name of some villainous corporation that you'd find in some movie from years ago. Like, this company BlackRock has all the villains in it. But the fact is, BlackRock is the villain here. And so BlackRock is the world's largest asset manager. They have over $10 trillion in assets as of January 2022. They were founded and they're still led by Larry Fink. That name was important. We'll get to him in a minute. So just to be clear, an asset manager, they invest other people's monies. So let's say you work at a company, you have a 401k plan, and you're given options of the different mutual funds, different funds that you can invest in with your 401k plan. Well, those funds are managed by a company like BlackRock. So BlackRock decides what companies will we invest in these funds. And like I said, they have ESG funds, and BlackRock pushes the ESG mantra more than anybody. Larry Fink is the big cheerleader for ESG. And so they're deciding what to invest in. And of course, if you're a company like P&G, like Disney, IBM, Microsoft, Apple, whatever, you really want to be included in these funds because that means more people are buying you. Because then when you decide, okay, my 401k is going to go into this fund, that means more money for that fund is going into these ESG companies like Disney or Procter & Gamble or IBM or whatever the case may be. So you want to be liked by Larry Fink if you're a public corporation. And to be liked by Larry Fink and BlackRock, you need to have a high ESG score, which means you have to go along with whatever Larry Fink and BlackRock thinks is important when it comes to ESG. So because of BlackRock's size being $10 trillion in assets managed, they're very influential. If Larry Fink doesn't like you anymore, he's going to remove you from his funds and your stock price is likely going to go down. It might even tank. And that's not good for business. If he picks you and adds you to his funds, your stock price is likely going to go up. And that's good for business. So in many ways, Larry Fink and BlackRock is more important to public companies than their actual customers. And so the examples of this, so like I said, they set the tone for this. And so this is why a company like Disney would be against the so-called Don't Say Gay bill in Florida. This is why they would go against it, even though they know they're supposed to be a family-friendly company. They're supposed to have a family-friendly image, and they're opposed to keeping groomers out of kindergarten classes. Disney is publicly supporting sending groomers into kindergarten classes, even though they're trying to project a family-friendly image. That's just insane. And you can't tell me, in fact, you can't tell me that all the Disney executives think that's a great idea to send these groomers into kindergarten classes. Yet they oppose a bill like the so-called Don't Say Gay bill, which of course we know that's not anything to do with it, because they know it will ding their social score in their ESG ranking. Likewise, Gillette, a couple years ago, I think it was Gillette, went against toxic masculinity. Gillette, which obviously a big part of their customer base is going to be men who shave, and they're attacking men. Why would they do something like this? Because it helps their ESG score. It's why they also don't bother doing them when it's politically correct in other countries, like, for example, Middle Eastern companies, because it's not like they actually care about the woke agenda. They just need to follow along with the program in order for Larry Fink and BlackRock to approve of them. That's why they're doing this. So some people might say, the one reaction could be, doesn't this show the problem with capitalism? Isn't capitalism ultimately the problem here? Because what capitalism is doing is it's these private companies setting the social agenda. Somebody like Larry Fink and BlackRock, a private company, is setting an agenda. These public corporations are going along with it, and this is how we're being controlled. This is how our culture is being shaped by these so-called private organizations. So therefore, isn't the problem really capitalism? And I would say no, it's not, for a couple reasons. First, in today's world, every company has to keep in very good graces with the government because of regulation. The most regulated place on earth today is Wall Street. To act like Wall Street is the paradigm or the epitome of the free market shows a fundamental misunderstanding of how today's financial world works. The fact is that every company has to keep in step with the government in so many ways because of regulations, because they can get shut down so easily. That's not a free market. If the government can easily shut down a company, that ain't the free market. Likewise, these companies, they have to keep in lockstep with the government because they know eventually they might have to get bailed out. I'm talking especially about these larger companies. They know that when the economy goes bad, when there's a recession like 2008, they need to be in good graces with the government so they get their bailouts. And in fact, they manage their companies based with the expectation that there will be a bailout if things go wrong. That's not the free market. That's crony capitalism, a connection between government and corporations. And then we see this with the woke agenda, because we see when we look at the deep relationship between Larry Fink, BlackRock, and the government, particularly the Democratic Party. Larry Fink is a lifelong supporter of the Democratic Party. That shouldn't be a big surprise. There are right now, for example, three former executives of BlackRock who are serving the Biden administration and high posts in the Biden administration. Former BlackRock investment executive Brian Deese, he leads Biden's National Economic Council. Wally Adeyemo, I apologize for mispronouncing that name if I did, a former chief of staff to BlackRock chief executive and longtime Democrat Larry Fink. He serves as a top official in the Treasury Department. Michael Pyle, BlackRock's former global chief investment strategist, who worked in the Obama administration before he joined BlackRock, is now back and is as in the government as the chief economic advisor to Vice President Kamala Harris. And so we see that BlackRock, former BlackRock executives are very high up in the Biden administration, but also it's true that BlackRock hires a lot of people out of the government. So there's this incestuous relationship between the Biden administration and BlackRock, between the government and between this supposedly private organization. And in fact, in March 2020, at the beginning of the COVID madness, the Federal Reserve picked BlackRock to handle an emergency asset purchasing program. And it was a no-bid project. It wasn't like the government said, okay, what company can best handle this for us? No, they just said, BlackRock, it's yours. You do it. They also did something very similar during the 2008 crisis, that BlackRock was picked by the Federal Reserve. And so we see that to act like BlackRock is this private organization that has nothing to do with government is ridiculous. It clearly is very much tied into the government. It has an incestuous relationship. There has been for a very long time between Washington and Wall Street. And we see it very much in the case here. And Larry Fink is a huge proponent of doing something about climate change. He's a big climate change radical. And so he's pushing that. So obviously, corporations that don't fall in the line, BlackRock is not going to support when it comes to the climate change crap. And so this happens. And so the Biden administration basically pushes ESG at Wall Street. BlackRock does their bidding and says, okay, that's what we're going to push. I mean, I do think somebody like Larry Fink is a believer in this stuff. So he pushes it and it trickles down into all these different companies. And I mentioned earlier how the Great Reset crowd is into this. There's this quote from Klaus Schwab. I imagine most of you know who he is. He's probably the James Bond villain, evil architect of the whole Great Reset crowd. He says, contrary to shareholder capitalism that always saw government as a source of all evils, stakeholder capitalism welcomes the idea of legislative action to define with precision the benchmarks for ESG reporting and performance. So there's Klaus Schwab just basically stating outwardly, we want the government to tell us how to rank ESG. What are the appropriate priorities when it comes to ESG, it comes to the social programs, the climate change programs that we're doing. We want them to do that. And there's this idea of this, he mentioned shareholder capitalism versus stakeholder capitalism. And basically what's saying is, companies shouldn't be directed towards making a profit anymore. Instead, they need to be directed towards changing the world and being socially conscious and all that. Again, that's not capitalism. That's not free market. That's the exact opposite of it. When the government is telling companies, you need to put these social causes before actually your bottom line, that's the opposite of capitalism. That's the opposite of free market economics. And so essentially what happens is, It's fascism. And I mean that in the strict definition of fascism. The strict definition of fascism is where the state basically controls all the entities of society. So we're getting to the point where there's very few true private companies in the sense that the state does not control them. Even the smallest mom and pop shop has certain control by the state because they have all these regulations and laws they have to follow. Now, most of us would probably say some of these laws are not bad. Obviously, a law against defrauding somebody is a good thing. But we all know that these laws and regulations go so much beyond that. I mean, just the example of the woman who wants to be a hairdresser has to get licensed to do it before she can do it. I mean, that's an example of the government controlling a private industry. She has to continue to get relicensed and things like that. And so fascism, though, is the state controlling all the different institutions of a country to push what their agenda. And that's exactly what's happening through ESG. You have the government setting these goals, setting these objectives of, you know, with Pride Month, BLM, climate change, all of that. And these, and then BlackRock, they get their marching orders, and they then push the companies that they're investing in to do that. So you see how it trickles down. So the government sets the agenda, or people like Larry Fink, Klaus Schwab, they set the agenda. They then push it down to these large public corporations that are beholden to them in so many ways. Those public corporations do it. And then smaller companies feel like, okay, we need to do it as well. And it trickles down all the way to the mom and pop shop having to put up their rainbow flag in June for fear of getting in trouble with the woke mob. And that's the real reason behind, the real driving force behind why so many companies have gone woke in recent years. Now, I always like in these podcasts to end it with some type of thing like, what can we do as Catholics to make whatever problem I'm talking about, whatever crisis we're dealing with, what can we do to solve this? Well, the fact is there's not a whole bunch. I mean, I hate to be kind of a Debbie Downer here, but there's not a whole bunch we can do. There are some things. First of all, I do think boycotts of these woke companies are fine. They do have success at times. I don't think they really have it. They don't really address their issue, and they really don't fix the fundamental problems. Obviously, one of the things we can do is advocate for more free market, less government control, less government incestuous relationship with Wall Street, which means opposing a lot of these regulations that the government's put on companies. And we can vote in that way. Vote for politicians who actually do are for limited government, small government, which is obviously not the Democrats. And unfortunately, most of the time, it's not Republicans either, sadly. Also, I really think you need to look at what you're investing in. You probably don't even think about your 401k plan, but you need to look. Is it an ESG plan? Is it through BlackRock? Is it investing in these companies that are doing this? And I think we have to put our money where our mouth is and really say we're not going to invest in these. Pull out of these 401k plans, pull out of these IRA accounts if they're investing in these type of things. That's, of course, money talks. And so I think that could have an impact if enough people did. Likely it's going to be like boycotting a company, not buying their products, not going to have a huge impact. But at least you're not tied into it. At least you're free from it. I mean, by not buying from a woke company and not investing in a woke company, at least you can have a clear conscience that you're not doing that. Now, it's impossible to be completely free from it. We can't survive in today's world without buying from some woke companies, but we can do our best. So I think that's really, it's a systemic problem that I don't think we solve overnight, but I think the purpose of this podcast was simply make people aware of it so you understand why it is that these companies seem to be undercutting their own bottom line. They're actually not doing that because they're putting their shareholders, they're putting the being on the index fund, their share price, their stock price above actually the products they sell to their companies, to their customers and to their customers' values. Okay, I think I'm going to wrap it up there. Hopefully I explained that well. Hopefully I explained that in a way that people can understand. I know it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot of stuff that people don't really follow a lot, but I thought this would be a good way to introduce it to people so they knew why is it that every company is insane in June? And why did they all embrace Black Lives Matter and things like that? Well, I think one of the main reasons is ESG. Okay, well, that's it for now. Until next time, everybody, God love you.